I think so much of career is shaped by your personality in your life, what you want to do in your life. And so if you think about the question, what do you want to be when you grow up? It's a really like limiting question because it's basically just saying, what's your job title going to be? Whereas a much better question is, what kind of life do you want to have?
Hello and welcome to the Brand My Career podcast. I'm your host, Alex Cutterford, and I'm so glad you're joining me today. My goal is to help you take ownership of your career, find your people through personal branding and networking, and take career-enhancing action. Managing your life and career can be hard. That's why every fortnight, I'll be releasing an episode where I interview a diverse range of guests that will help you find clarity and build confidence in your career. Let's get into it.
Well, welcome back to another episode of the Brand My Career podcast. And today I have Alana Kilmartin with me. So thank you so much for coming on. Really excited to chat about Unserious Careers and the roadshow that you're on at the moment. So I guess, do you want to share with our listeners about who you are and what it is that you're up to right now?
For sure. Thank you so much for having me, Alex. So I'm Alana Kilmartin. From Unserious Careers, and I wrote a book for school leavers last year, and it's a fun guide to the first 5 years of their career. So it was the book that I needed when I was 18 and leaving school and wasn't really sure what I was doing in the world. And when I released the book, I didn't really know what I wanted to do with it. So I thought, let's hit the road, let's speak to young people. And so at the moment, I'm on the Unserious Careers 2025 Roadshow, traveling across Australia with the goal of speaking at 250 high schools in 1 year. And everything's going really well at the moment, quite hectic, but the message around it is being really well received. So I guess I'm very, very passionate about careers with young people. Because of how important I think those first few years of your career are for shaping the ideas that you're going to have moving forward with your career and life.
Yeah, absolutely. What was it that made you become so passionate of it? What's your story in all of this?
Personal experience. I think a lot of the time when there's that passion, there's something that's driving it that's personal, right? And there was probably multiple times throughout my career where I had those aha moments, or this isn't right, or why is it this way? And I'm even thinking about when I was at university, I'd just done a study abroad to the US, and I'd come back to Melbourne, and I was like, man, I feel like everyone's just doing the typical thing. They're maybe going to uni, they're getting a degree, they don't really know what they're going to do with it, and everyone just goes down the prescribed pathways. And something about it, I don't know, something about it didn't sit right with me. And I felt like I was being funneled down a pathway that I didn't want to go down. And so there were moments like that for my career. I mean, if we go way, way back to when I was younger, I thought I wanted to be a doctor. But then through life happening, through going on and having different experiences, I realized it just wasn't the right fit for me and it wasn't something I wanted to do. And where I guess the idea for the book and Unserious really came from was when I was I was 26 years old and I hit burnout in my career. And I'd found an incredible environment. I was working in travel. It was a really great combination, combining skills with something I was passionate about with travel. But I had just overworked for too long and I couldn't keep showing up each day. It was crying on the way to work because I was so overwhelmed by the job, and realizing I'm 26, I don't want this to be my reality or my life. But also, if I work really hard, I can prove to myself that I can be successful. So why not, I guess, apply that ambition and passion to something where it can help people? And it was in those moments where I was like, I think I want to write a book. And it took a number of years to get to this point, but now I don't think I've ever felt so aligned in my career, where there's a natural energy, I think, that comes from doing something that's a great fit, where I'm doing creative things that I love doing, I'm having an impact, I get to speak to young people, and it's an incredible feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. I was sort of having another look back through your sort of work history, and I was seeing where you had started writing your book. And then you've obviously had a lot of experiences between there. So it's obviously been something that's brewing for a long time. And you mentioned there around that feeling of you can tell you're being funneled down a pathway that you're not necessarily getting to sort of choose for yourself. What are some of the things, I guess, you've learned and written about that can help someone sort of navigate that moment in their life?
It's a really good question. I think so much of career is shaped by your personality in your life, what you want to do in your life. And so if you think about the question, what do you want to be when you grow up? It's a really like limiting question, because it's basically just saying, what's your job title going to be? Whereas a much better question is, what kind of life do you want to have? And when you're 16 or 17 years old, you don't really know what that means, because all you've known up until that point is in essence school, you know, hanging out with your mates, seeing what people in your family do for work. That's kind of your exposure to the world. And I think so much of it is about going out and experimenting, but not just within your career and trying different jobs or starting a business, different degrees, apprenticeships, but it's more around, what do you want to do on the weekend? What activities do you want to participate in with your mates? You know, who are you as a person? Because when you have more of an understanding about what drives you as a person and what you enjoy, makes it way easier to then reverse engineer a career that's going to be a fit for that. And I grew up on a farm in a very small area in Victoria, and it was a fantastic place to grow up, don't get me wrong, but I felt very restricted living there because there were only so many options that I saw around me. And I think I was just desperate to break free of that for a little while and go and see what else was out there in the big wide world. And through doing that, it was like, oh, I didn't even realize business ownership was a thing. And sure, I saw business owners around me, but I didn't have anyone close to me that owned their own business. So it's really that piece of exposure of going and exposing yourself to different thinking, different ideas. Find out what it's like to do a job that you hate, a job that you, where you're working in a great team. Like, go out and try all these different things, because the sooner you start taking ownership for that journey and what you, the places you're going to put yourself in, the much more creative your career becomes and the much more, I think, fulfilling it becomes, because you start to take almost like control over your career, and it's not about someone else giving you the job and opening the door for you. You start opening your own doors.
Yeah, it's the ownership piece, and obviously that's become a big driving point and center point of my messages around taking ownership of your career. It's a funny thing when you're young, like, you're not even aware that that's a thing, you know, like you're not even aware that you can take ownership of your career. You're kind of just going with the flow. I probably didn't feel that I was being channeled down a path. I was probably channeling myself down a predetermined path of that I was no good at school, so I'm moving towards a trade sort of thing and getting out as quickly as possible. And it wasn't even going through my mind to, you know, how to, you know, sort of take ownership of that process and shaping how it can look and stuff. You sort of, and I do think there's plenty to say for, you know, allowing that to naturally come to that place yourself. Like, you can't this now for us in our experience, look back, we can't just force someone to and do the exact same thing as what was happening, but just with the language of, oh, you need to take ownership of your career, and putting that pressure on to people. I think, like you're saying, getting that exposure without the pressure, I think is a really great place for a young person to find themselves. So you get into some of the things in the book around transitioning from school to adulting, which I like the sound of. Me and my wife are in our 30s, and we both still talk about how hard it is to be adulting. what are you thinking when you say that, and what do you hope for a young person to glean from that?
Look, there's time. I think there's so much pressure on a young person to decide on anything in their career, yet they're not given the tools to design a life, maybe, is probably the way I'm thinking about phrasing it, where it's important you start making some sort of progress in your career, of course. Like, you want to be feeling like you've got forward momentum to some extent. But there's so much time. And if you think a young person's finishing school when they're 17 or 18 years old, let's say they are going to work for the next 40 or more years. there's time for them to go out and try different things and it not go right. There's time for them to take a gap year or to work for a while and then to go and do something different, to go and travel if that's what they want to do. And there's the older I get, I think the more I realize most adults don't know what they're doing. There's that everyone's still figuring it out. Everyone's still winging it, because the older you get, the more like the wider your perspective of the world is, and the more you realize you have nothing, you know nothing about this area over here. So like, let's even say, for example, if you're going to buy your first house, then all of a sudden you like thrust into this new world where you're like, I didn't know that this was how it worked. And you're going through a new level of figuring it out and having no idea what you're doing. And so for a young person, it's just that they're at that first level of figuring things out. And if they can give themselves a breathing space to go, well, there is no rush to figure it out, because once I figure this out, there's going to be another layer that I'm not going to know anything about, excuse me, that I'm then going to need to figure out, right? So life, I feel like, is just one constant stream of figuring things out. It's not about that you get all the answers by the time you're 21. It's just that you're in this phase, you're experimenting here, you're exploring here, then we're into a new phase. And I always think about it, it's funny when we make career decisions when we're younger, because you're thinking about them in a very maybe selfish lens is the only term I'm thinking of at the moment. But you have a wife, right? So if your wife has an opportunity in her career, that's going to mean you have to travel across to the other side of Australia and live in Perth, right? But it is like a once in a lifetime opportunity. And she really wants that. You really want that for her. You've got to then sit down as a couple and make that decision. And the chances are you might then have to give up your job. You might have to have a shift because of what she's done. And there's this like constant reanalysis, I suppose, of career decisions as you get older and your priorities shift. Because you're not, if you are in a longer term relationship, then there's a whole other host of factors that you need to consider. And so when we're making these decisions when we're younger, it almost feels like we're making them like, this is an exclusive decision. This is what I'm committed to. But we're constantly receiving new information from the outside world that's going to mean we're going to have to reassess our decisions.
Absolutely. We've been in that situation numerous times, both on opposite ends of the thing. There's been times where I was doing work that I was really passionate about, but then some of the aspects of that work weren't ideal for our, you know, lifestyle by way of how often I was going away. So I was like doing lots of camps and stuff with young people, and I was in that more youth work space, and it was getting to a point where that wasn't working. And so the thing that I had to say to Melissa, I was like, I get it, understand. I was like, I need to come to the place where I'm letting go of it. That it's not a thing of, I'm just going to stop this to make you happy sort of thing. And so I really had to sit with it for a little bit and almost grieve a bit of the letting go of something that you feel was the right fit. But then we've had multiple times where we've sort of done things like that. And at the time you feel like you're losing something, but then as the picture starts to unfold and then the new things that you step into and the new opportunities that present themselves, you then start to look back and you say, oh, I'm really grateful for all those opportunities, but I'm so glad that I've moved into this new space and this new space when you eventually move on from it, you know, will open up a whole bunch of things again. And so It's a tricky one to navigate. There's no perfect mold for it, because there might also be times where you sort of, you know, you say, no, like, I need to stick at this, and you find a different way to make it work.
Right. It's a really great point. And I'm even thinking, it's making me reflect on when I first had the idea for Unserious Careers 5 years ago, right? But I only released the book last year. It was absolutely a slow burn. And my natural way of working is I can get things done really quickly. If I'm like, it's the right fit and I've got the space, I can get things done really quickly. But what I've realized as I get older is that there's some things that just, it's okay if they take longer, because it's actually better that you time it right than it is just to get started right now. And for so many years, even since I first had the idea for the book, I was like desperate. I was like, I just want this to work out. I want to be my own boss. I want to own my own business. And I would almost like have these fits and starts where I'd try something and be like, no, it's not the right fit. So I'd backtrack and then I'd have another go. And what I realize now is I've had this kind of insane 6 months where things have taken off quite quickly with the roadshow and with Unserious Careers, where I look back now and go, it couldn't have happened any sooner because I don't think I would have been ready for it. I don't think I would have had that maturity and maybe that little bit of extra perspective to be able to now navigate what I'm going through, where it's, you know, coordinating schedules and working even in schools, because working in schools is another, it's a different beast compared to, say, working for in private businesses, right? And I honestly don't think 3 years ago I would have been able to do it. I just don't think I would have had the maturity is the only thing I can think of, but just the awareness to go, this is bigger than me. This is about more than me. It's not about my ego. It's about schools are an incredible place where I can go in and share my message and help back up some of the messages that they're trying to send. So it's a much better fit if we work together. And I don't think if it had happened 2 years ago, I honestly think it would have blown up, as in I would have blown it up myself. Like I would have self-imploded because I just wouldn't have had that, kind of that maturity to know how to handle what's happening at the moment and what might now come in the next few years. But then there's, it's a funny thing about life, right? Then it's like, well, if we take a step back from the business, then it's like, well, what do I want for my life now for the next 5 years? And how does the business fit within that? How does it drive some of those life goals that we have? And you really are just constantly reassessing and reanalyzing.
Yeah, absolutely. So hopefully you go the positive form of blowing up and not the negative form. It's really true. I often find myself in this. So one of the things that I had to really work on earlier in my career was around procrastination, in that I would sort of work myself into a loop of overthinking about things and not actually actioning anything. And so then I've sort of worked on that. And within my sort of career life, that's actually become quite a good strength of mine now, and that I don't sit on things because I've worked on it to go, I'll get something to good enough and then I'm going to put it out to the people that I need to report it to, get their feedback, iterate, and you make something better quicker than sort of sitting and feeling like you got to try and get something perfect. But then I also am always sort of working on a little sort of side hustle ideas and thinking about things that I could be doing. And, you know, the podcast being one of them, but always thinking about, you know, course ideas and book ideas and things like that. Or vending machine ideas. I love the idea of non-sexy businesses, so like a laundromats and vending machines. So, all of this does my wife's head in, all of the ideas that I'm always thinking about. I've worked out, so I have to hold this tension between, I'm like, I don't want to be a procrastinator that sits on ideas, but also you can't just try and launch at every idea that you ever have. But what I find is I'll sort of explore an idea and I'll sort of dig into it as far as I can and then sort of work out. But then once I'm like, oh, this isn't actually something I can do right now or isn't the right fit. And so you sort of scale back and then you have another idea and you dig into it and explore it. But all of that is still a good practice and good learning. And then you can just have it sitting there for maybe one of them at another time will jump up. Or maybe it's all the different elements of the things you've been thinking about might merge into something else. And or it might just be that you have some thoughts and insights to share with someone when they have the idea, and maybe they're going to be the person that runs with the idea, and you can give some thoughts and insight and some research and stuff that you've done and just have a good conversation with someone. So, yeah, it's never lost, but it's a dance that how you sort of explore things and at what point do you say to yourself, all right, you need to do something, and what point you say to yourself, you know, it's okay to let that one slide and pull back.
Yeah. I love what you just said. There's a couple of things I wanted to touch on there. So the perfectionism is absolutely something I still work on. And I almost had this moment in October last year where I went, I'm going to do the opposite of everything I'd normally do to take this idea from what it is into reality. So it was like, even when I had the idea for the roadshow, it's like, You don't need to have a fancy website for it. You don't need to have proper email marketing software. Just sent out the most basic emails one by one to each of the contacts that I'd had from this conference. So it was me one morning copying, pasting, changing the name, and I just sent it all out, right? And that's pretty much how it all started. And I only put up a page for the roadshow a couple of weeks ago because I was like, it's not important. It's not what people care about. They care about you going out and giving a really great talk to their students and moving them and inspiring them, right? And I just pretty much did the exact opposite of everything I thought I needed to do, because I've read books and I've listened to podcasts, and I went through a massive phase of listening to podcasts about businesses and marketing. And I was like, at the end of the day, the best business plan I can have is going to be one that I implement and iterate and just keep like refining, right? Whereas if I try and get the perfect plan in place before I begin, I will literally never get started. So that's the first point. The second thing is about the ideas. I've had ideas throughout my 20s in particular, where I'd get really excited about the idea and I'd share the idea. I'd say I'm going to do something. And the worst feeling to me was when someone would remember that and they'd bring it up again a year later, 6 months later. I'm like, so how's that thing going? And you're like, oh, you know, it didn't quite pan out. But the funny thing is, when I said I was going to write the book 5 years ago, I told people about it. I told my family, I told some friends and stuff. And it was actually my brother in particular that would love bringing it up, because there's this scene on Family Guy. I don't know if you're ever a Family Guy fan, but there's this scene on Family Guy where Brian says he's going to write a book, and then Stewie keeps like reminding him, like, oh, how's that book going? And so my brother and I had a bit of back and forth banter where he'd bring up, like, you know, how's the novel going? And I felt almost ashamed, because I was like, I had this idea, I knew it could impact people, but I never implemented it. The funny thing is, when the timing was right and when I was ready, I did it. And it was like, wow, I had the right idea, but the timing just had to be right. And the funny thing is, even about what I'm doing now with the roadshow, I remember when I wrote the first draft of the book, and that's going back like 2.5 years ago now, right? I wrote the first, it was terrible, this first draft. But I remember saying to my partner, like, how cool would it be to do a big book tour around Australia? And we kind of toyed with it for a little while, thought about how awesome it would be, and like maybe mentioned it to a couple of people, but nothing too concrete. And then it's like, I'm doing that book tour. Like, that's what I'm doing at the moment. And so I think there's some of these ideas that you actually do have a really good idea, but the timing's not right. You don't have all the information yet. You don't have the experience. You don't have the exposure or the connections to be able to get it off the ground. And you, like, I mean, I'm someone, I come up with a billion ideas all the time, right? The ones that I think have longevity and merit, they will stick around. And as long as you keep doing little bits of action, all the rest of it, and you stay honest and you check in with yourself of, is what I'm doing at the moment actually what I want to be doing? I don't know. Sometimes I think these ideas eventually do become a reality. And so I have another idea, and this was an idea, excuse me, that I had. We're talking like university days. So I was probably 22 years old at the time. And this is when I had my first real, what's this whole career situation going on? What am I doing with my life? And I had the idea about, like career camps pretty much. And I was like, that'd be so cool. And now all these years later, this is nearly 10 years later, it's like, that's probably going to be one of the things I end up doing. Like, it was an idea I had over 10 years ago, would have loved to have got it off the ground then, but I didn't have the capacity to do it then. I didn't have the resources, the know-how, the perspective. Whereas now it's like, oh yeah, this is kind of all leading that actually might come around full circle. So you just never know when some of these ideas are going to come to life.
Yeah. I've seen things about, like, because you can have the idea, but then you need the substance. And and one of the things that I started thinking about was, for myself, matured optimism. Because I can very naturally have a state of optimism, but often it's just like a bit too delusional. It's like, it's sort of just like, oh, it's just like a puppy dog with ideas, you know, and it's, and my wife is always, you know, the one that has to bring me back to reality of like, yeah, okay, well, how are you going to do that? Oh, what's that mean about all the other ideas that you're having, you know, all of the practical questions. Interested about the book and doing the draft, like what's that process look like to do a draft of a book? Like, because you don't necessarily have a background as like a traditional pathway to becoming an author, right? Like, which a lot of people that write books don't. I'm just interested, what did that process look like for you doing that first draft?
I mean, that first draft was so bad. My poor partner had to read that draft. And funnily enough, I was in Yamba on the weekend, and Yamba over 2 years ago is where I printed at the local library because I'd finished the first draft. We were traveling through and I printed the first draft at that library, and my partner had to read it on the drive from Yamba back to Sydney. This poor man, like, he had a couple of highlighters. It was double the length of the final book. There was so much waffle in there. He got through it somehow and he's like, there's a book in there, but it needs a lot of work. I had a really good piece of advice from someone, and basically what they said is you need to create a creative constraint on yourself. So it's pretty much what I ended up doing is, I can't remember if I had this idea first or it was from the conversation with this person, but they're like, you need to create like a time and a place where you're going to write the thing, and that's all you're doing during that time. And that kind of style of working works really well for me because you can see all the things of, you know, get up and write 2 pages or get up and write a chapter, but it just didn't work for me. I'm someone that needs to almost go intense in on something and I'll get it done much faster rather than drip feed it out over the course of 12 months. And so what I did was, my partner and I were about to go traveling and we booked the first, I think, month or so in Bali. So we pretty much reduced our costs drastically from what they were when we were living in New Zealand. And we're like, right, let's go there for a month. And we spent three weeks in this one place. And I said, right, I'm going to write the first draft in 3 weeks. And we went there the first 9 or 10 days. I wrote the plan for the book. And then pretty much in 9 days, the other 9 days, I wrote the entire first draft. And I think it was maybe about, I don't know, 76,000 words or something like that. And it was just more, right, what do I need to do during this time to get this like out? So if that was, I need to go and work at a cafe for a couple of hours just to get some movement around me to get some ideas flowing, let's do that. If it's that I need to get up at 6 a.m. and smash out 3 hours before taking a break and then having breakfast, then that's fine. And I pretty much during that time, all I focused on was writing this first draft of the book, and everything centered around how do I put myself in the best possible position to be able to do that. There's a bit of a thing around writing where the first draft's the hardest thing. If you can get the first draft done, like, nothing will ever be as hard. There is some truth in that, but I think it's a different kind of hard. Writing the first draft is it's probably the most challenging part of it, because you really have to push yourself because you know it's terrible. Like, you're just writing it and you're like, I know this makes no sense. But there's another part that I probably wasn't prepared for, and it took me 18 months to do it because I did a crappy job to begin with. But the actual editing process, I think, is more difficult. So I would say the first draft's more challenging because you've really like, it's a like battle of the mind, but then the more difficult part is the editing. And because I had really high standards for it, knowing that I wanted to be able to put it into schools, I had different filters that I knew it was going to have to pass through. And I did an initial editing process, got it to an okay point, did a very soft release of it, didn't market it, but then came back to it probably 8 months later and was like, right, let's actually give it a red hot go and let's properly edit this. Had another editor come in, and then pretty much me and my partner went back and forth probably like 20 times start to finish to get it to where it is. And that is hard because my partner's really good at pointing out, he's like, yeah, this paragraph doesn't make sense, but I don't know how to fix it. And I think it's a really important idea, fix it. Which meant that I'd have to take this paragraph, go away with it and go, how do I say this better? How do I make it better? And there were some sentences and some paragraphs that we would have gone over 20, 25 times to try and get perfect, because we had that standard of, well, we want it to be able to go through schools, we want it to be able to go through the parent lens, and we also want it to be really readable and digestible for a young person. And I've read other books before where you read them and you're like, yeah, they make sense, but they're not a very refined book. Like, they've done the bare minimum they need to edit it, and there's probably really great ideas, and if they just done another couple of rounds of editing, they could have taken it to the next level. So it was like grueling, that editing process, but
yeah,
totally worth it. And I'd probably go a slightly different route if I was, when I write the next book, whatever that is, I'm sure I'll write another one. I'd probably tweak some of the process, but I wouldn't compromise on the quality of the end edited, polished result.
Yeah, and the big thing I'm hearing is just the amount of resilience that's needed, you know, like, because I'm even the singer on things when I start working, and then when it, yeah, like, it's a lot of grunt work up front, but then it's like the picking it apart and editing it piece is where, like, you got to be really resilient, because then you start, like, second-guessing yourself and everything, like, I've sort of felt like lately I've been in a bit of state, because, you know, you have seasons of your career when you're feeling really confident of the direction you're going. And then you have seasons where you start bringing in a whole bunch more information to sort of challenge all of your assumptions and the direction that your career is on. And then all of a sudden everything feels really cloudy again. And you feel really uncertain, and you start to think, do I even know anything? And then you sort of got to process all of that, get yourself back into some understanding of context of where you're at in your career and what you want to achieve. And then you sort of move forward again. But there's so much resilience through that. You know, you're this, once you're going back through your book and editing again and again, and you sort of trying to push yourself, and then you're sort of, you know, second guessing yourself and coming through, but doing that, whether it's writing a book or whether it's a project you're working on at work, mm-hmm. or whether it's just working out what career you want to go on and what pathway you want to take, like, this, the resilience required is so important.
Have you ever read Deep Work by Cal Newport?
No.
Highly recommend. It's very rare that I'll read a book twice. I don't know. I just kind of like, I read it and I take with the ideas, whatever. But there is a book, so I've got that book and I've read that a couple of times now. And I think it's Cal Newport. That really changed the way that I think about work. And I'm not one of those productivity hack people where it's like trying to optimize your schedule or something like that. Because I worked out a long time ago. I don't think it works for me. I think I'm almost seasonal, how you say, like, the seasons you go through in your career. I think there's also just seasons of work that I go through in my output and how I'm able to produce. And the basic concept of the book is that you really can't work hard for 8 hours a day or 12 hours a day, that we really only have a limited capacity for, like, really deep work to actually get results for maybe 4 hours a day. And his notion is that all of our day is often filled with, we're reacting to an inbox. We're not actually necessarily getting any proper work done and moving the needle. And he talks about these different styles of working with deep work, where there's some people that are really suited to, let's say you have a book, let's use the example of a book. So there's some people that, everyone has a book idea, right? Like, everyone's got the idea for a book they write. And it's like there'll be one lane of thinking that's like, okay, you get up and you do an hour on your book every morning before you go to your regular job. So you know that each day you're getting some sort of, you're moving that needle for the book. But then there's other styles of deep work where it might be that you dedicate one day a week to that project or that thing you're passionate about. But there's something else he talks about where it's, and I think he uses it, I think it's a couple of psychologists from back in the day or whatever. It might have been Carl Jung or something like that, where they work deep for like a long period of time and they'll isolate themselves basically to do it. I think Bill Gates does like Think Weeks or whatever, where he'd go away for a whole week into a cabin and think, right?
Yeah, he goes to his little hut, yeah.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
That's what I've found can work really well for me, where I go, right, let's put aside 3 weeks and let's go like hardcore into this thing. So I did it for the book, and I did it again when I was doing the first proper round of editing for the book. I basically had feedback from an editor and I needed to do a rewrite, and I had a deadline of 3 weeks' time. So it was pretty much, once again, 3 weeks hardcore into it. Didn't think about another thing apart from eating and sleeping, right? And I think that's what I've discovered even with, say, the road show and how I'm planning this, that at the moment I'm executing because I'm out, I'm speaking in schools. There's still a lot I need to do from a business perspective from the back end, but it's like the execution's actually more important right now than the planning and the refining behind the scenes, because there'll be time to do that. And like, yeah, in an ideal world, you'd have everything perfectly set up and streamlined and optimized, and there'd be workflows and there'd be all this kind of stuff. But realistically, the season I'm in at the moment is execution of being in schools and speaking to young people, right? But I know then for the next book or for the next big project, whatever it is, that's how I'll work. I'll go, cool, let's set aside like 2 weeks and all I'm doing is going hardcore into that, because that's when I think that's when those ideas go from just being ideas to let's get some proper clarity and action on it. Because when I just find if I try and do a little bit of something every day, it takes me way too long to get into the zone if I'm just doing a little bit every day. Whereas if I just go, cool, yeah, Monday to Friday next week, all I'm working on is this aspect, that's when I can start to get more results.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And that, I guess, thinking about how that applies to a young person would be that it's about them working out and understanding how they operate and then finding ways that they can apply that to their world. Even and then thinking, because obviously you can't always do it to the perfect point that you'd like, because if, say, if you've got an employer and they're paying you, they want you to rock up Monday to Friday, you've got X amount of responsibilities and they want all of them progressing along nicely and getting on top, and it's like, no, you can't just disappear for 3 weeks and we don't know where you are, and you're smashing Doritos and in your under your blanket smashing out a book. But if you can understand it, then you can better self-advocate for trying to get your workplace to best suit your needs and how you best operate, right?
Well, even like if we take the example of, let's say, a university student, right? University is only in session for what, like, is it even 30 weeks of the year? Like, it's an insane number of holidays that university students get, right? Even university students have, like, stints of time and often working and saving money and stuff like that, but stints of time to be able to go, and if it's a side project, if it's a side business or whatever. That's the way that I work. And I think what the most important point is, find what works for you. That's like my equation, where it's like I need longer stints of time, but like intense. Whereas for other people, it's like, yeah, I can do an hour of work in the morning before I even leave to go to my job. And whether that's to create a transition business or a transition, or whether it's applying for jobs, like the job application process is brutal, right? If that someone's in a job and they want to go and they know they don't want to be in that career anymore and they want to make a change of, right, well, can I dedicate 1 hour when I wake up every morning to job applications, to updating my resume, to connecting with people on LinkedIn, to have conversations, whatever it is. I think once you know what you're clear on that what that thing is that you want to work on, it makes it much easier to find the time.
Yeah, absolutely. So what would you say is the biggest lesson you've learnt so far on your tour? I know, how far in? You're less than a month in, right?
Yeah, so I did my 21st school yesterday. Biggest lesson. There's a couple of things. Young people are awesome for a start. Like, I've had some really beautiful conversations with some young people, and being at the front of the room, like, I've had everything from my smallest presentation was 6, and then I've had over 200 in a talk, right? And I get to see all their faces. They think I can't see their faces, but I can see their faces. So I can get like a read on the crowd, right? And there's plenty of people that don't necessarily look at the stage. They're just doing their own thing, and that's totally fine. But I get to see, there's always some students where it's like they're really locked in. They are enjoying it. But then after it, I get this awesome opportunity to speak to some of the students. And I think we like to give young people a hard time. It was the same when I was that age of, I don't know, you're lazy or you're entitled, you don't want to work, blah, blah, blah. But it's not necessarily been my experience with young people. And probably another lesson, which is I'm still processing this one. It was something I really thought about yesterday. And I don't know if it'll go anywhere. This might just be one of those interesting thoughts. A massive drive at the moment for New South Wales education is attendance, right? That there's been a massive problem with attendance at school, particularly since COVID. It basically hasn't picked up again since COVID. And so I've seen at different schools I've gone to that they're really pushing for attendance. And I don't know, but something about that really fascinates me. And I don't know if it'll lead to anything or it's just going to be one of those just interesting parts that I didn't necessarily realize I was going to see, that, yeah, schools are really struggling to get students to even show up in the morning, which I find crazy, because how do you learn if you're not there in the first place? That's been really interesting, like really interesting. And then the other really interesting thing is I give out lollies during the presentation, and I really like to hand them out myself, because it's a chance for me to go and just connect with the young person, even if it's just a fleeting moment as they take a lolly from the they take a pack of lollies from the bucket. Manners. I've noticed a really big difference in manners in different schools and different young people. I was at a school yesterday and they had the best hit rate for saying thank you. So when I'd hand them out, that they had honestly, they might've been like 75%, right? But I would say like more often than not, most schools, I'm lucky to get a 50% hit rate for a thank you when I hand out lollies. And I find that like fascinating. I don't know if that would have changed since, whether that's just young people in general or whether there has been a a decline in manners. But I know when I was growing up in my like household, manners were really pushed. Like that was, you got to say please and thank you. And I'm like, I don't know. Once again, it might just be one of those little thoughts that just trickles away in the background. I'm probably going to pay more and more attention to it, but it's all little pieces of the puzzle, right? So when you think about on a longer term time frame, I'm going to be really fascinated if this attendance thing is an issue and it's going to be ongoing. The government's now trying to put practices in place, right, to get attendance back up. But what kind of impact is that going to have on our workforce over the next, say, even in 10 years' time, once you've got that actual effect of the people now then going out? Because we obviously had that generation that had COVID, those lockdowns in those final years of school, but potentially they already had those foundations in place. Whereas the young people now that are going through years 10, 11 and 12, they had COVID when they were starting high school maybe or thereabouts. Yeah. So it'd be interesting to see how that tracks over the long run into the workforce and what impact that has.
Yeah, absolutely. Coming from a background of working with young people that were disengaged from school, I think about a lot. The trap is to get sucked towards the attendance rather than thinking about what do we actually want to achieve with the attendance when it occurs, and is it an environment that they actually want to attend, and if not, why not, and what can we do about that, and thinking about it very holistically as well. Because young people will go to school if they feel safe and if it's an environment that, you know, is positive for them and things like that. And it's actually a great place to go. And, you know, you've got friendships and all this stuff. So if they're not going, there's reasons why, and you really got to sort of dig into that and stuff as well and make space for that to really grapple with the bigger picture of it all as well, which I think we sometimes struggle to do. So it'll be very interesting to see. And definitely the COVID hangover is going to be real for a long time. Like, you can't just tell a young person that you have to stay home for X period of time and then all of a sudden turn around and tell them and just act like they hadn't been told that and say, no, it's absolutely vital that you come and attend and be here in person after you just spent, you know, 6 months of their like most formative years telling them to stay home and that they can do it from home and stuff. So yeah, it'll be interesting.
I'm sure you're even seeing it now with because you've obviously moved, but even the difference between regional/rural and metropolitan. I've been Newcastle and then regional from there, but I'll be doing Sydney shortly, and I've done some city schools last year. There is a really big difference in I already knew it existed. I grew up in a regional area. I knew there was an opportunity gap that certainly happens, but yeah, I'm really starting to see that now from a different lens. And so I'm really intrigued to see how, say, Sydney responds, public and independent and private and all that kind of stuff, the difference between them. Not every young person in this country has the same access to opportunities and education, which we already know, right? But it's to see it firsthand is interesting.
Yeah. Well, I definitely look forward to hearing all of your lessons at the end of the year and watching the journey as it goes. So how can people find you, follow along with the journey that you're on this year and finding the book and all of that stuff?
Yeah, so you can go to unserioscareers.com. So that's where you can purchase the book. And then I'm on LinkedIn, so Alana Kilmartin. And I technically have Instagram, but I need to get better at posting on there because I haven't posted anything yet. Social media is not my strength. But yeah, LinkedIn's a good spot and also the website.
So well, thanks so much for being on.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for joining me today. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And let's connect on LinkedIn so that we can keep the conversation going. Or head to my website and download my free resource, The Career Building Principles. Bye for now.